Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I'm A.B. Dawji, and this is, of course, The Big Picture, the program in which we look at the world with something of a jaundiced eye, with the tongue firmly in the cheek, unpacking the complex shenanigans of rogue politicians and shining the lights on the mamparas, the ullus, and the chorwans. Sometimes you just want to throw your hands up in the air and say, hey, this is too ridiculous for words. The sheer hypocrisy, the double dealings, the total madness of what's happening on the world stage leaves you gobsmacked, speechless. So let's see what we got for you this week. Let me look here through the events over the past few days. Yes, there's something about Trump. Here's a story about Palestine, one small thing about Yemen. That's it. Well, it looks like there's nothing going on, not much to speak about. So, I think we'll just pack it up, eh? Well, thanks for tuning in to The Big Picture. And so, until next week, from me, A.B. Dawji, it's bye-bye. Until next week, ciao. Hello? Hello? Yes. The engineer is opening his big eyes at me and waving frantically and indicating that he has no material to fill up the rest of the program. And now he's looking quite aggressive and passing his finger across his throat. I wonder what that means, eh? He seems to be quite cut up about me leaving. Or maybe he wants me all cut up. Sure. I better not take any chances. Maybe he's learning from the Saudis or something. I don't know. Okay, then let me see what's happening with the story that isn't going away. It's in the headlines of the mainstream media, the international TV stations, BBC, CNN, Al Jazeera, etc. New developments every day. And everyone is wondering why Turkey's president, Erdogan, is playing his cards so close to his chest. Why is he not revealing all the evidence? And yesterday, Friday, he said, I will reveal the evidence when the time is right. I will reveal the evidence when the time is right. Hello? What's the meaning of when the time is right? 3 weeks have passed, Baya. 3 weeks. The time was right a long time ago. So why is he doing this, eh? Could it be that he is waiting for the Saudis to deny something and then he hits them with the proof to show that they are lying, making them look silly? For example, the Saudis said he entered the consulate and then left. And Turkey said, that's nonsense. We have video of him entering and nothing showing that he left. The Saudis then said, well, he was in a fist fight. And Turkey said, we have audio and video of his screaming for his life. And the Saudis said, yes. It looks like he was murdered, eh? And so the Saudis have been contradicted at every statement that they made. And Turkey is pointing more and more to MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince, with Erdogan saying, King Salman surely didn't know of the murder. That's King Salman. And the implication of that is that his son, MBS, the crown prince, knows something. And the evidence is getting stronger and stronger that Mohammed bin Salman knew about this. There are claims that phone calls were made to the office of MBS from the Saudi consulate in Istanbul as Khashoggi was being chopped up. So the lies are being exposed from the office. The lies that are coming from the office of MBS are being exposed. Maybe MBS stands for Major Bull... I can't think what the S could stand for. Eh? Any ideas there? MBS, Major Bull Silliness? No, that doesn't sound too catchy, does it? But back to Erdogan. Another suggestion is that he is withholding evidence, or perhaps he has given it to the Saudis and their American friends to show how explosive it is, this evidence that he has, maybe directly and clearly implicating MBS, so that he, that is Erdogan, can gain some benefit out of this. Meaning, if you don't give me this or that, I will release the shocking evidence that I still have. So, Mamus, you better play ball, eh? Is that the game? Maybe, or maybe not. Actually, both sides are playing a game. If, as the Saudis say, that's especially MBS, claim that they had nothing to do with it, these 18 characters acted on their own accord. It was a so-called rogue unit. Then, logically, the Saudis would immediately round them up, which they have, interrogate them, and then, whoa, you know, they have their ways of interrogating. And then they would get all the answers, all the evidence, and tell the world what happened, all within one day. Yes, one day, when these 18 guys return, in one day you could have got the evidence. That is, if they were serious and were not themselves involved at all at the highest level. I'm speaking about MBS and the Saudi government. Get to the bottom of it immediately. Finish and clear. But no. What we've got is ducking and diving and lies after lies from the highest office. So what does it show? That the orders came right from the top. And the big one is this. Where's the body? That, dear listeners, is a very crucial question. A veritable hot potato. A veritable hot veritable, a nice word that. I just checked it up in the dictionary this morning and decided to use it just to impress you. I hope you're impressed. So where is the body? Habeas corpus. I think that's what it's called in legal terms. Again, I'm showing off a little bit. Habeas corpus. It's easy to close the subject and stop the speculation. Very easy. Standard procedure in repressive regimes. Hang the fellow upside down and deliver some lekker sharp electric shocks to his delicate parts. And he will start singing immediately. Ah! Wait, yes, check in the well at the consulate's house. I threw him down there. Wait, are you all right? As we would say in Durban, go check in the Belgrade forest outside Istanbul in the corner by the bridge. He's there under one big pile of rocks. Go check, Ahi, Habibi. You see, it's very easy. Just one day. Maybe 1 hour and all the information will be revealed. They will be singing like canaries. But hang on. What if Erdogan knows much more? Friday, he said, Why all the silliness? Tell us, where's the body? Maybe he knows where it is and is just putting the Saudis under pressure, huge pressure. Because, you know what, things will be very, very serious indeed if the killers chopped up the body and then each one of those 18 guys took a piece of the body in diplomatic bags, like big duffel bags, and carted them off to Riyadh. So, if Khashoggi's body is in Saudi Arabia, that would be a major hot potato. Actually, it would be a whole sack full of hot potatoes. And then the Saudis will really have their chips. More chips than in the KFC kitchen. And maybe Erdogan knows. He knows this. And so he said, if you can't get the answers from the 18 people you arrested, then send them here to Turkey and we will make them talk. Now that, dear Bayo Orbeno, is a big one, eh? If the Saudis send the 18 to Turkey, they may just spill the beans completely and point the finger at the Crown Prince. Crown Prince. That's right. Mohammed bin Salman. And of course the Saudis can't risk that. So the bottom line is this. This story is a long way from being over. Hot potatoes and lying aloos. That's what it's all about. MBS. Major bull shenanigans, eh? Let's take a look at this so-called royal family. You know, I'm always amazed that a whole country is named after a family. So let's have a quick look at who this family is. There's a whole lot I can speak about. But way back, Mohammed bin Saud, way back in the 1700s, he consolidated everything. There were a whole lot of desert tribes and all that. And so he consolidated everything. And to jump fast forward, the Saudis, they're small little clans here and there around Riyadh, a couple of villages they consolidated, got together. But then they stood with the British against the Ottomans in 1915, when the whole Ottoman Empire was on the wrong side, and then the Ottomans were destroyed. And then we had Abdul Aziz ibn Saud. He managed to get all those, well, there was a lot of infighting and all that. These were desert tribes, very destitute desert tribes. They were fighting amongst each other. And then in 1932, he got all these things together. He defeated a couple of the other tribes. And the short story is, 1932, we had the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia established. That's right. And something dramatic happened short while later. In 1937, American explorers found oil near Dammam. Dammam, and that's when the Dammal started. That's right. Dammam. Oil. Not 200 in 6 seconds. Wow. They became extremely wealthy. And they were called the royal family. 15,000 of them at the moment. But the hardcore central lot of 2,000, they are the wealthiest. And how much is the royal family worth? How much? Anyone out there? There's a hand at the back. No, you're wrong. The royal family is worth $1.4 trillion. $1.4 trillion. That is over 20 trillion rands. 20 trillion rands. I don't even know how many zeros there are. How many noughts do you put there? Has anyone of you written trillion? And of course, they are the custodians of the two holy mosques. Wow. And then we have the king, King Salman. He is the ruler. And his nephew was next in line to take over, but he was nudged aside, sidelined. And so he made his son, Mohammed bin Salman, 33 years old, he made him the crown prince. That means after he goes, after he leaves this world, or if he's deposed in some way, then Crown Prince Salman will take over. Crown Prince means he's the next in line. But in fact, he's the de facto, another nice word. He's actually the actual leader now, because his father is old and doddery. I think I told you about this last week. And his personal fortune, his family's personal fortune is, are you ready? 850 billion dollars. This is all reported, it's all out there. And it's also reported that he's a very humble guy, very simple, he likes a simple life. So he bought a little boat. Well, actually it's a yacht. And he and how much did he pay for this little yacht? $500 million. And then he bought a little house, spare house, like a holiday home. It's got quite a few, but the one he bought in Switzerland, a villa, a chateau. Chateau. How much he paid for that? Ah, just some pocket money. $300 million. And he had to have, you can't just buy a house without putting a painting up, can you? So he bought a painting, a simple one, by Leonardo da Vinci. And how much did the painting cost? A mere $450 million. But he likes sports, you see. Sporty guy is our Mohammed bin Salman. Sporty character. So he decided, okay, it's been reported that he made a bid to buy Manchester United for $3 billion. I think they told him to foot check. $3 billion, Manchester United. All this has been reported. And of course in March he flew over to his friend Donald Trump and he did a deal to buy some planes, some jet fighters, some frigates, you know, this military navy ships, and also some missiles. It's nice to buy things from your friends. The bill for that was, $12.5 billion. $12.5. Shook hands, smiling with Donald. And he also announced that he's considering buying more stuff from America to the tune of $400 billion. $400 billion. Shame, these guys are battling there. Is that why we have to pay Hajj and Umrah taxes? They can't afford to host us there? No, we have to pay. Right, so this guy is very confident. Why is he confident? Because he did all kinds of things. He took a dramatic step when Saad al-Hariri was there. He locked him up. That's the president of, prime minister of Lebanon. Locked him up, kept him for a month or two. And told him to resign. And then he locked up a whole lot of multi-billionaires, some from the royal family at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel. Then he locked up a whole, I think about 300 sheikhs and so on. And he wants to create Dubai. He wants to create Dubai in Saudi Arabia. He wants to have lots of pop concerts and all kinds of things. So he felt very, very, very confident. And of course, he got so confident that he decided that if he gets rid of a critic, not a very strong critic, but a critic nonetheless, who's got something of a big mouth, writes in the Washington Post, so he felt very confident that this guy has to be shut up. So let's get back to Khashoggi. There are some countries who are very quiet about what's happening regarding this murder. And I'll tell you about that after the break. Yes, welcome back. The program is called The Big Picture, broadcasting simultaneously on Radio Islam and Radio Al-Ansar. Radio Islam right up to 12 o'clock and Radio Al-Ansar up until 12:45. And it's audio streaming, which means you can pick it up on your laptop or on your cell phone. That's right. Just Google it and you can hear The Big Picture. And before the break, I said that there are some countries who are very quiet about what's happening regarding this murder of Khashoggi. Russia and Iran are saying very little. Could it be because they are gloating at the fact that the Saudis are in the soup? No point in putting the dagger in when your enemy has shot himself in the foot. Could that be the reason? But there's another country that is saying almost nothing about the predicament of the Crown Prince, Mohammed bin Salman, MBS. And that country is Israel. Why is Israel so quiet? Well, I got some idea from the Haaretz newspaper and the Jerusalem Post. I read these two papers every day. Get very educated. Lots of stuff there. And the answer to the question, why is Israel silent on the murder of Khashoggi or the Khashoggi MBS issue? Well, the Haaretz newspaper's headline said, why we should go easy on the Saudi Crown Prince. That was the article. The headline was of that article, why we should go easy on the Saudi Crown Prince. I'm just going to read the last paragraph from you, for you. It says, however, this time it's necessary to treat the suspect, meaning MBS, with kid gloves. Trump's peace initiative, if it is ever put on the table, is apparently the direct result of pressure by Mohammed bin Salman, who wishes to legitimize Israel before embarking on open cooperation with it. For 50 years, this is the part I like. For 50 years, we've prayed for a key Arab leader who agrees to sign a significant pact with Israel. Such a leader has finally arrived, and calls to depose him are destructive. Let me read that to you again. I just love that part. For 50 years, we've prayed for a key Arab leader who agrees to sign a significant pact with Israel. Such a leader has finally arrived, and calls to depose him are destructive. Ha! That says it all, eh? But no, let me tell you a little bit more. Here's an article in the Jerusalem Post. The heading is Khashoggi and the Jewish Question, and the subheading is, it is certainly not in our interests to see the status of the Saudi government diminished in Washington. And the article continues, as Dor Gold, the head of the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs and former Foreign Ministry Director General, said, this problem could be used by the Iranians to drive a wedge between the West and Saudi Arabia. That is bad for Israel, he added, because anything that strengthens Iran's posturing in the Middle East is bad for Israel. And in the Middle East balance of power, a weakened Saudi Arabia means a strengthened Iran. It also means a strengthened Turkey, which could explain why Ankara is going the full Monty on this issue, releasing surveillance tape and leaking information about the investigation. He also said Turkey is part of an axis with Qatar, and that puts Saudi Arabia at odds with the Turkish government. At first glance, one might think that the reason Saudi Arabia losing status in Washington is bad for Israel because of the increased cooperation between Israel and Saudi Arabia, and the hope that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu often alludes to of being able to leverage that into Sunni pressure on the Palestinians to show some flexibility in the diplomatic process. A Washington-Riyadh tiff could compel the Saudis to rethink this cooperation. And the article says, Iran Lerman, the vice president of the Jerusalem Institute for Strategic Studies and a former deputy National Security Council head, said, it is certainly not in our interest to see the status of the Saudi government diminished in Washington. Lerman envisions a scenario where Jewish political organizations in Washington, such as the American Jewish Committee, which he once worked for as head of its Israel office, may actually go to Washington, to Capitol Hill, as they have done in the past, and discreetly lobby for the Saudis. Lovely stuff. Lobbying for the Saudis. And here's another article from the website Mondo Vice, and it's by Philip Vice. It says Israeli lobbyists smear Khashoggi as terrorist so as to maintain Saudi alliance and plans for Iran war. He says that even as headlines around the world say that it murdered a critical journalist, Saudi Arabia has some friends in the U.S. The Israeli lobby is going to bat for the theocratic dictatorship, meaning Saudi Arabia, over the alleged killing of Jamal Khashoggi. Last night on I-24, E.J. Kimball, an Israeli advocate at the Middle East Forum, suggested that Khashoggi deserved to die. The journalist's ties to Al-Qaeda and the Muslim Brotherhood raises a whole lot of other issues, says this Kimball. This is, I'm reading from the article still. An article says, Josh Block of the Israeli Project made a similar allegation about Khashoggi two nights back. Block said, pro-Al-Qaeda media are pushing that Khashoggi story because Khashoggi was a radical Islamist terrorist ally who was close to Osama bin Laden, ISIS, Hamas, and wanted to overthrow the Saudi ruling royals who opposed both the Sunni terrorists sponsored by Turkey and Qatar, as well as Iran's Shia terrorist armies and allies. So, breathtaking stuff, isn't it? Khashoggi deserves to die because he's a dirty, rotten, stinking terrorist? Good heavens, eh? So even if MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, gave orders to kill him, this is what these articles say, what's the big deal, eh? Therefore, MBS is clean. He's a good guy. That's the story that we have to project. He's a good guy. And therefore, Trump should continue good relations with him so that he, that is MBS, can remain in power and therefore continue the close friendship with Israel. So, the pro-Israeli lobby is working very hard behind the scenes to ensure that there is no fallout between Washington and Riyadh. Israel needs MBS so that it can push through its plan, something that Trump announced himself, the deal of the century, as he calls it. Or to be clear, the con job of the century, which will mean that the Palestinians will not get a complete independent state of their own, but just little bits and pieces of land in the West Bank and maybe the Gaza Strip, something like a Bapu-Tatswana, or even worse, little bits of land surrounded by the Israeli army and the Jewish settlements. That's all. Since 1993, when the Palestinians signed the peace deal, they waited and waited and waited to have their own state. And after all of that, this Bapu-Tatswana arrangement will be all that they will get, if ever at all. It's a joke. And as I have been saying, this for many years, that Israel had no intention of giving the Palestinians their own state. I've been saying this for years and years and years, but you know what, you people don't listen to me. But one day when I'm not here, then you will sit there and think, yeah, man, he was right, nah. So, Israel wants to push through this rotten deal. It has Donald Trump on its side. That's, of course, Donald J. Trump. That's his full title, Donald J. Trump. J, as you know, stands for Jungly. So Donald Jungly Trump is all for it. And the Saudis, and the Saudis are also in the bag. And Israel has been working hard for many years now, quietly, behind the scenes, to get all the Arab countries on board. And so on Thursday, Netanyahu went to Oman And he was very, very well received by the Sultan Qubus, who set out some nice tea and naan khatai for him. And, of course, they left on Friday, and Oman's foreign minister announced that that means Oman, is not involved in any peace deal, and that America is the main meaning that whatever Trump decides in the so-called deal of the century is okay with them. So nice, eh? So nice. So, bottom line is this. Israel is not negotiating with the Palestinians. It is speaking to all the sellouts in the Arab world. And of course, they are ready to sell out the Palestinians. Why? Well, actually it's very simple. These tin pot dictators rely on America for their survival and protection. Jungly Trump said that. These are actually actual words a few weeks ago. He said, Saudi Arabia wouldn't survive 2 weeks without the protection of the United States. Imagine that. Not very diplomatic of him, was it? But he's never diplomatic. And he said that Saudi Arabia won't survive 2 weeks without the protection of the United States. He actually, by saying that, called the Saudis useless, hopeless, weak characters. And of course, the Saudis have to just grin and bear it. What else can they do? And all these illegitimate rulers will shake the hand of Netanyahu and turn a blind eye to what he is doing to the Palestinians. Friday, another 5 Palestinians were killed by Israeli snipers. Israeli snipers, of course, have very high-powered rifles that can kill a person at about half a kilometer away. So they are in no danger at all from the thousands of demonstrators who gather every Friday to demonstrate at the Gaza fence. Demonstrating for what? To get out of the Gaza prison, which is a hellhole, and go back to their homes in what was originally Palestine and now it's called Israel. 5 killed. 5 killed. Do you know them? Do you know their names? Of course not. The world is rightfully upset at the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. You read his articles. I'm talking about the world. America, you read his articles in the Washington Post. You saw him many, many times on BBC and CNN and Al Jazeera. I have seen him many times. You saw him walking into the consulate. You saw his fiancée. You feel like you know him. And so you feel for him. You don't know the 5 that were killed on Friday. But someone knows them. Their mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers and friends cry for them. They miss them. Young men murdered in cold blood. Who are they? Let me tell you. The 5 people killed were identified as Ayesh Sha'at, 23 years old, Saeed Abu Lebde, 22 years old, Nasser Abu Taim, 23 years old, Muhammad Abdul Nabi, 27 years old, and Jabir Abu Hamisa, 27 years old. Make dua for them and those they left behind to ease the pain in their hearts. And in the hearts of those who lost their loved ones at the Gaza border, from March 30th until today, 210 have been killed and 18,000 wounded. Did you get that? 18,000 wounded! 18,000 wounded. It's a cold statistic. 18,000. Someone may have lost an eye or a leg or an arm or may be paralyzed for life. The dead are gone. But the injured ones have to continue life in pain and suffering. Do these so-called leaders of the Muslim world even think for a minute that they are smiling and shaking, while they are smiling and shaking hands with a person who is causing so much of suffering to the Palestinians? I don't think so. All they have in mind is how they can keep their power and life of luxury, even if it means using a bone saw to achieve this. And I came across a hadith which made me think. Actually, it's the saying, it's the prediction of our beloved Nabi Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And he was talking about future times. People were always sitting at his feet asking him questions about what's going to happen in future time. And he made some predictions. And I wonder if this is a prediction about what's happening in the Arab world, especially the affluent part of it. He said, naked, destitute, that means half-dressed, destitute, barefoot shepherds will compete in building tall buildings. So maybe in the 1700s, these people were barefoot and shepherds, and then oil was discovered. And what do we have now when we go to Dubai or any of these places? The shepherds will compete in building tall buildings. He also said, trustworthiness will be lost. That is, when authority is given to those who do not deserve it. Right, let me finish off, after all those very grave statements, with some light at the end of the tunnel. That's what you're waiting for, aren't you? Hey, come on, admit it. Oh, Chota Mota went to the Congo on business. You know, I'm very concerned about the environment, and therefore I think we should recycle plastic and stuff like that. Recycle it. I'm always for recycling, and therefore I'm recycling these old jokes from way back. I hope you forgot them. Chota Mota went to the Congo on business, and he got very sick. Very sick. And by the time he got back to Joburg, he had a very high, raging fever, and he was shivering. The ambulance took him from the airport to the hospital, where he was put in a special isolation ward. Blood was taken from him and lots of tests were done. Next morning, the phone next to his bed in the hospital isolation ward, the phone rang and the voice said, "I am Dr. Hussein. We got your test results. You have a very dangerous virus which is highly contagious." And Chota Mota said, "Aray, doctor, what are you going to do?" And the doctor said, "We are going to put you on a diet of aloo paratha, pancakes, and puri patta." And Chota Mota said, "Hell, doctor, will that cure me?" And the doctor answered, "No, but it's the only food that we can put under the door." Okay, we got a minute or two. Let me give you another one. Ghulam Bhai from Mir Bank. You all know him by now. His son Yusuf is going for Hajj. And, he's already gone for Hajj. And Ghulam Bhai wants to know, because he wants to phone him, so he wants to know what's the time difference between Durban and Makkah. So he phones Telkom's international calls department. And Ghulam Bhai said, "Please, can you tell me what is the difference in the time between Durban and Makkah in Saudi Arabia?" And the operator said, "One second, sir." And Ghulam Bhai says, "Thank you very much." And he puts the phone down. quick one. Yeah, Ronnie asks his son, Indran, what he learnt in school today. And Indran answers, "Dad, I learnt about the idea of give and take. I learned about the idea of give and take." And Ronnie says, "I'm proud of you, son. proud of you. Tell me more. And Indran says, I gave Selvan a punch and took his lunch. This is A.B. Dawji bidding you all. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.